yourself a nice fade on that.
You thought I was going to fade this time, didn't you?
I did.
You thought I was because you already screwed up one of the first take of doing this, and I cut it off cold. Yeah, and
but
you
didn't fade. You the
went
first
all
time
crazy
either.
On me, and I. But then you thought I wasn't going to do it again.
Well, no, I was.
You thought I was going to fade out because of your recommendation.
I figured you were going to do the same thing, but I was trying to fake the fact that we
you had got
that
something this on is, your face.
That this is our second take.
I don't know what it is. It's on your face, on the other side of your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gone now.
Okay.
Well, it's Christmas time, man.
It sure is.
So we I just decided bought to play
the tree.
I just decided to play a Christmas song. Mm-hmm. I made sure that it was one about Jesus because you're an hateful atheist.
But I love Christmas.
And that was Tammy Faye Baker.
With what sounded like the Pepsi Generation singers behind her.
That was the PTL singers.
Yeah, but they have...
That's an old PTL record that I have.
They have a soda commercial wall of sound going.
Mm-hmm. They did. They had a lot of money back in the day. True. That was the early 80s. Early 80s pre-scandal PTL record with Jim and Tammy. And I didn't have to pay very much for that record at all. It was pretty cheap. I got it at the store I worked at. Mm. And the boss was like, "You can just have it." And I said, "Thank you."
It's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah.
And you're Dave White, film critic for
Movies.com. Movies.com. Also a person who is battling a sinus infection.
You are.
And I think it's getting better. I think I'm getting better. Mm-hmm. I'm not, testing. I'm not going to test it today.
Right.
But I'm not even going to talk much in this podcast. You're going to do most of the talking. Okay. Because I have to preserve myself.
Your instrument?
I spent all day on the couch yesterday with a hot water bottle on my chest. Just to break up all the cement that was somehow in there yesterday. And I think it actually sort of did the trick. I'm going to do it again as soon as we're done with this.
All right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm going to drink tea but not eat food. Apparently.
Actually, as soon as we're done with this, we have another podcast to do.
Oh, that's right.
We are.
I might make you do that by yourself.
No. We're going to be special guests on the Game Night Guys podcast. So hopefully around the time whenever this goes up, theirs will probably go up as well. So if you haven't had enough of our shenanigans, we will also be on that show.
I've already had enough of our shenanigans.
Now, do you know what's not improving?
Wait, I wasn't. Oh, okay, what?
The part where after I introduce you, you remember to introduce me.
You're on Zdoralde of the Rap. THEWRAP.com. You are the film critic of there. And then you're also the film critic of What the Flick alongside Christy Lemire and Matt Atchity and Ben Mankiewicz and occasionally Gray Drake.
Yes.
And how many other guests have been on that? Other people?
That's been it. There's a guy named Jonathan Kim who does his own separate ones.
Right.
I think he's part of he has other functions in the Young Turks Network. I've only met him once, so I don't really know his story, but I know he is one of the other reviewers for that. And yeah, and we're in this new studio because their new show starts tomorrow on Current on Monday.
They need to get their
December 5th.
They have a lot of things to work out.
Yeah, and it's
saw that What the Flick.
Yeah, and it's
the other day, and you guys look all washed out.
I know,
and you're echoing. The audio is weird.
Believe me, I mean, all the comments are complaining about how they.
I understand us having tons of technical difficulties all the time and weird audio problems, but And did you do a test, by the way, to make sure that we sound all right?
I don't have to. I know what the problem was, and I fixed the problem. Uh-huh. Yes.
I see. All right. But yeah, y'all are a big. That's a big fancy enterprise. They need to get it. They need to get it together.
I'm sure by the time they go on the air Monday, it will be a much smoother thing, and our future shows will look better too. But
yeah. I'm not going to eat anything anymore ever again on this show because.
You've been schooled.
I've done it twice, and both times people got real angry. And I think here's what I realized about it is that for a certain segment of the population, eating noises are the equivalent of nails on a chalkboard.
Right.
And I didn't understand that. So I'm sorry. I'm not... actually sorry, but I'm not gonna do it again.
Nor are you Canadian.
I'm not gonna do it again because I wouldn't want my least favorite noises to be broadcast into my iPod ear bud thingies.
It's an intimate moment that we're creating here,
so. yeah
rattling around people's skulls.
I was having intimacy with some food, and that's not cool with folks for whom food noises are repellent.
Yes.
Like one guy even said, I had to turn it off. And I was like, oh, I felt bad about that.
Sorry.
For like 2 seconds.
Sorry about that.
And then I thought, turn it off. And then I thought, oh, wait, this is that thing where people freak out about a specific noise and it drives them crazy. And I totally do get that. So we're not going to do it anymore. I'm going to sip my tea, though, especially today, because I got to. I've been hot liquidizing myself for 4 days. Every time I have a sinus infection, I treat it like it's cold. And that kind of does the trick. Like, I mean, unless I let it get out of hand, and then I have to go to the doctor and get antibiotics or whatever. But
do those products that break up mucus any help?
They don't work at all. The hot water bottle worked pretty well.
All right.
So we have this cashmere-covered hot water bottle.
It's very fancy.
It's so great. It's real soft, but super hot.
It makes you feel like you're Maggie Smith in Downton Abbey.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is kind of a weird week, apart from you getting sick. Nothing big opened.
Nothing opened today. Well, they front-loaded it with Thanksgiving.
Yeah, they had six major movies opening last week, so this week was just kind of the carryover. And apparently, from what I'm reading, it's the second lowest box office weekend of the whole year.
Well, yeah, because
people are shopping or doing
all you've gotten. People are shopping, or else they are, you know, they're catching up on the things that opened last week if they're not the kind of people who go to movies over the holiday.
Right.
But the second week of any movie is always a lower week. No,
and third week, because it's still, just Twilight is still number one.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, so, you know, it's like, no major film opened this week. Art house and Oscar-y kind of stuff and Oscar qualifying things.
I never understand that concept, because it seems like the whole notion of seasons seems to be pointless to me. Because it seems like, you know, every time they say, oh, well, you know, a movie that opens in March never does blah, blah money. And then until we opened, you know, 300 in March, and then all these people came.
Right.
So I think I don't think people care when it is. If it's a movie they want to see, they'll go see it.
Yes.
You know, and so it just, I don't know, I feel like that one of the movies, like maybe if they had waited and opened Hugo this weekend and given it a feel to itself, as opposed to cramming it up against The Muppets and Arthur Christmas, you know.
And Twilight.
Yeah. Well, but Twilight, that was already its second week. Anyway.
Did Arthur Christmas make zero money?
It did. Not great, but not terrible. Right.
Go see
Arthur Christmas. It's so badly marketed, but so good. So, yeah, I know you hated the trailer. I know you hate the posters. Go see it anyway. It's really great.
You will not. It is not what you think it is.
No.
It is so much better.
Much. So anyway,
all right. So let's talk about the two things that opened only as Oscar qualifying runs.
No. There were three movies this week, two of which that opened in limited release.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
there were four movies that opened this week.
Well, I know we didn't see Sleeping Beauty.
You still don't know what you're talking about.
Did you see Sleeping
Beauty? You still don't know what you're talking about.
Shame opened in limited release.
That's correct.
Okay, so not just an Oscar qualifier. It actually opened in like five markets.
Yes.
Outrage opened in limited release.
Also correct.
Coriolanus.
And on demand, by the way.
It's been on
demand.
So
you can see
it.
Exactly.
It's already been on demand. And Coriolanus opened as an Oscar qualifier.
That is correct.
What's the fourth one?
The Lady.
Oh, The Lady.
See, I kept telling you, you don't know what you're talking about, but you didn't. You persisted.
But you kept saying.
You kept saying that you thought you did know what you were talking about when you knew that I was right the whole time, ultimately,
I never,
and that I was going to explain to you how right I was.
I never know. "Quote unquote," that you're right, because that's.
Where's Gary Cotty? Is he still in our apartment? Is he in the house somewhere?
I think he's in the facilities.
Is he? I think he's lying down somewhere.
Or that. It's not our business, really.
Gary
Cotty helped us get the tree this morning.
I wasn't doing it.
No, Dave was on his sick bed with the hot water bottle, but Gary Cotty and I. Went to Home Depot and brought back a glorious...
After all that Facebooking about, where's a better place than Home Depot? And then when people told me and I started calling around to ask
What
the prices were. These are like $100, $150, $200, $250 trees.
Wow.
Like crazy amounts
suddenly
of money at these
Depot
lots.
Suddenly Home Depot started
looking
a lot
better. Yeah, suddenly Home Depot was like, I don't care if it doesn't smell very much like anything.
I'm smelling it now.
It's brand new, and this is a super fresh cut tree.
Yeah.
This tree is
wet.
First of all, it smells more like soil than anything else. That's how fresh. It is. It is also the biggest Christmas tree we've ever owned.
I believe so.
It is so hugely big around. It's a good 6 feet in diameter, I would say.
Yeah.
That's gigantic.
Yeah.
It's taking
but it's
up.
Not, but it's not so high that it's like bending against the ceiling.
Taking up almost all of the walking space in the entry of our home.
Mm. We may have to move this table back towards the wall.
Well, we're going to have to move the table back. We're going to have to move everything.
Can we move that wall? Is that possible?
Yeah. So, okay. So the lady, which you did not see.
I did not see the lady.
And that I opened. I reviewed for movies.com. Stars yep. Michelle Yeoh.
You have to say it like Jerry Lewis.
I can't do it today. Do it. You do it.
The lady.
Yeah. That's how you do it.
Okay.
Luc Besson directed it. Michelle Yeoh stars as
real person.
As the real person, Aung San Suu Kyi. She's the she's basically the Nelson Mandela of Burma.
Right.
And they call her the Steel Orchid. And
well, she's not a steel magnolia.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing, this movie, she's not very steely.
Ah.
She's more orchidy.
Michelle Yeoh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have to make an effort to make her not
exactly.
Steely.
Michelle Yeoh will kick you in the face.
Yeah.
But in this movie, she's very polite and she's very reserved. She's like Lady Gandhi in this movie, you know, and if they mean steel in terms of determination and resolve, then sure. But she even says in one point in the movie that she has a fierce temper, terrible temper. I'm like, when are we going to get to see some of that?
Right.
When are you going to start, like...
When are you going to release the Kraken?
When are you going to martial arts somebody in this movie? Because I know you can do that.
Does she spend the whole movie in house arrest? Is it like...
Yes!
Like,
this is a movie...
Like
all
it's a sleuth where
this
it's all
is a movie
the house.
About a lady who's stuck in a house. Huh. And it should be so much more... It should be so much more compelling and
are there
and,
flashbacks where she's in the street marching or something?
No.
Really?
No.
Just her in the house.
Her in the house.
Wow.
And
Luc Besson.
Luc Besson, who's an action director. Yeah. And so not that there's any inherent action in this story. The story is of a woman who spent 15 years in house arrest
right.
by the Burmese military regime, you know,
but
sticking
you
her there.
You don't hire Michael Bay to make the woman in the house movie.
Right.
You
know? And so this is...
Although Luc Besson hired himself, I assume.
Yes. Obviously, this is a very important...
Subject
to Luc Besson, and it should be a very important subject to just folks in
yeah,
the world
no, she's
who
a,
care
she's
about...
a human rights champion.
Because Burma has, like, the grossest human rights record of almost everybody. You know, now that, you know... Now that
Indonesia is getting off of East Timor's
now
back.
That the Serbian war is over, they've just brutally, you know, like, tortured their people for years and, you know, mass forced labor of children and stuff. Like, there, it's horrible. You don't want to live there. And so Aung San... Suu Kyi is this, you know, heroine, and she's still alive. She's still doing it. She just had dinner with Hillary Clinton this past week. On the day I wrote the review, it turned out I Googled her name. I was like, what's she doing right now? You know, like I figured somebody would say something.
Is
about
she still under house arrest?
No.
Oh.
No. And millimeter by millimeter, things are getting better in Burma. But, you know, like reading the woman's Wikipedia page or reading any number of internet articles about her is more compelling than watching this movie.
I see.
It's only opening for 1 week right now. It's playing right now in Los Angeles and New York. As of late Friday afternoon, movies.com had still not posted my review. and I assume they're going to do it Monday. I'm in no hurry.
Halfway through its run.
Yeah, you know what? I don't care. They can do whatever they want.
I want to point something out about this. We got a screener of The Lady, and this is the season where, you know, all the studios, most of the studios, send screeners of their movies that they...
To you.
To me. And you've been getting some this year, too.
That's an accident.
You know, for awards consideration. And usually in the packaging of these DVDs, when you open it, like if it comes in a little cardboard sleeve on the inside, it will list like all these categories where they would like you to consider it, you know. And right. it's basically like it's for mainly for Oscar people. So they do all the big categories like sound design and, you know,
right.
costumes and whatever, even yep. stuff that a lot of other people don't vote on. And generally they will cast a wide net. They want you to know like all these different ways that you could honor their movie.
Yes.
The screener that came for the lady, you open it up, it says, for your consideration, best actress, Michelle Yeoh, best supporting actor, David Thewlis. That's it.
The end.
Like, they aren't even pretending that you might consider this for best picture, or Luc Besson for best director, or whoever wrote it, or whoever did the score. No, right. No. The two performances, that's it. That's it. And they wash their hands of the rest of it, which is... I have almost never seen in an awards screener.
Okay, whatever. They're going to reopen it to art houses.
Early 2012.
In early 2012. And it's...
where's the big Burmese population in the U.S.?
It is a worthy subject to make a movie about.
No question.
And it's a boring movie.
And that, sadly, is so, you know, it happens both in making movies and in honoring movies, especially like in the Oscars for Best Documentary. People confuse what the movie's about with how good the movie is.
Right.
It's like, you know, we were joking a month or two ago about how I don't think Schindler's List is a particularly... I have a lot of problems with Schindler's List. It doesn't mean I'm a Holocaust denier. It doesn't mean I'm an anti-Semite. I heard
that you deny the existence of the Holocaust.
Well, on Wikipedia?
No. I think that's where I read it.
That is not
on your
true.
Wikipedia page.
I heard
that you were an anti-Semite.
I am neither.
And a Holocaust
denier.
I am neither
of those things. I just don't like
Schindler's
List. I probably
should start introducing you as Alonzo Duralde, film critic of the rap, Holocaust denier.
Denture wearer. No, I'm not any of those things except for film critic. So it's like you can dislike the lady and not want to support On Song Suu Kyi's, you know, quest for human rights in Burma.
Right. Send her some money.
Exactly.
She probably could use some.
You know, Amnesty International, I'm sure.
Right. Send some money to Amnesty International. Whatever you were going to spend on a ticket to this movie.
Yeah.
Send it to Amnesty International. The end of discussions about the lady.
Next.
Coriolanus, other Oscar qualifying movie of the week. Shakespeare.
Yes.
Done all hip-hop, it turns out.
Well, Shakespeare, like, that they're barely acknowledging in the trailer. It's not hip-hop. But it actually says, you know, screenplay by John Logan, which, yes.
Plus the Earl of Oxford.
Yeah, exactly. Plus whoever actually wrote Coriolanus, you know, Shakespeare or otherwise. Rafe finds his directorial debut. He also stars in the title role as... Caius Marcius, a Roman officer who faces down his mortal enemy in hand-to-hand combat in battle, and is given the honorary title of the title of general and Coriolanus, and does not particularly want to go into the Senate, but his pushy stage mom.
Being dragged kicking and screaming is sort of the exactly what happens to
him. His pushy stage mom, Volumnia, played by Vanessa Redgrave, rather insists. And
rather.
And he, like many of the people that you see in the Republican, the GOP debates of late, has to sort of pretend to like the rabble more than he really does in an attempt to get their votes.
He didn't even do that.
But he doesn't.
Even do that.
And they don't like him, and eventually
he hates them, they hate him back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And eventually, not only do they not elect him.
He doesn't even believe in popular rule.
Yeah.
He doesn't even believe in people being able to vote.
No,
crows are coming to peck the eagles is one thing that he says.
He is like super elitist fascist, like, these guys do have no place in government. We elites do. So eventually, he is not only not elected to the Senate, but exiled from a city known as Rome, as they call it in the movie.
This makes mom upset.
Mom is upset, and
says the best line in the movie.
Go ahead.
Anger is my meat. I sup upon myself.
I want that
on a t-shirt. Anger is my meat. I sup upon myself.
I wonder if you could be an anger vegan.
I need it. I need a black t-shirt with black, extra black, like Metalocalypse kind of script font that says, Anger is my meat. I sup upon myself.
I think the last time I've heard anybody use sup...
XL. 100% cotton, XL.
Double X if it's American Apparel. The last time I heard anybody use sup as a verb, I think, was in the old Steak and Ale commercials.
Exactly, and Steak and Ale is a great place.
No, it wasn't.
It was not a great place, but it was delicious.
They had an okay salad bar and decent prime rib, I guess. That was a thing. Like, what happened to all the steak and ales? They just, they're
gone. You got Outback now. You got Outback, you got, Laurie's.
Right, Ruth's Chris.
Well, Ruth's Chris is...
That's fancy day. Oh, yeah. So that's an expense account place.
But you know what? Steak people think they hold up their noses at Ruth's Chris.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's too
mass market.
It's middle brow. Yeah. But, ooh.
It's good.
If that's the middle brow, I'm all right. Yeah. With the middle brow.
Again, it all comes back to butter.
Yeah.
How did we get here? Oh, yes, Coriolanus.
Anger is my meat.
I sup upon myself. Yes. Okay, and so then eventually an embittered Coriolanus teams up with his former rival, played by Gerard Butler, to invade Rome and teach them a lesson about kicking out their best soldier. I really liked this movie.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's
dark and rough.
It's design wise, it's told in a very updated way. Like you know, you have cable news pundits speaking in iambic pentameter, and you have
that was rad.
You know, people wearing modern day clothes and stuff, and that can be kind of gimmicky with a Shakespeare movie, and certainly given the fascist nature of Coriolanus the character, they could have very easily gone the 30s brown shirt route the way that like Richard III did, and even Julie Taymor's Titus.
Right.
But no, they go contemporary, and it all works. And all these things that you would think would work against it don't, like the modern dress, the presence of Gerard Butler, who was finally in a good movie. And Vanessa Redgrave, damn. She's really, really amazing in this. And
stop swearing. This is a clean podcast.
Oh. That's you can get away with that in the family hour.
That's a swear.
Meanwhile,
I'm the one that always slips up and swears.
Yes. It really works, and for a first film, as a director, Fiennes really knows what he's doing. Like, really good with working at his cast. I mean, which is consistently great. It includes Jessica Chastain's gajillionth performance of 2011.
Sixth or seventh?
I thought it was sixth.
Sixth or seventh? I think it was sixth.
Sixth.
Yeah.
The Help, The Debt, Tree of Life, Take Shelter, Texas Killing Fields, and this, right?
Yeah, how many is that?
That's six.
Okay, yeah. That's right.
And visually interesting.
She made something that was supposed to come out this year, but it's not going to come out this year. It's Al Pacino, Salome movie.
Oh, that's right. She's in that. Yeah.
That was meant to come out this year, I think, but it's probably so terrible that it's not going to come out until February.
Yeah, exactly. In one theater. Is the Oscar Wilde Salome?
I don't know which one. Huh, it's somebody's Salome. It's Al Pacino's Salome. Yeah.
With Adam Sandler. So Coriolanus is really good. Again, not opening in the rest of the country. It's only playing in New York and LA until Thursday, and then it's opening everywhere else in like January or February. So.
Something like that. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know what we're going to do in early 2012. When
we're going to be watching the crappy things that they put out in January and February.
Good point.
All those turd movies that come out then.
And that next Steven Soderbergh movie, which
occasionally
I think
do give you some nuggets of joy.
True,
like the roommate.
I am hearing good things about that Soderbergh movie, whose name I can never remember.
I don't care.
No, I mean it screened at AFI because I remember seeing the trailer, thinking, "Wow, this looks great," and then at the end, it's like January. I was like, January, really? But apparently, it's
That's excellent.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Outrage.
Already available on demand. You can watch it whenever you want.
Wherever you are in the United States.
If you've never seen a Takeshi Kitano movie, you should totally do that because he makes really great samurai movies and really great Yakuza movies.
Yes.
And this is the latter. And
is it Yakuza?
Dude. You know what I'm not?
Japanese. Fair enough.
You know what I get to do? Pronounce that stuff any way I feel like pronouncing
it. This guy's chin strap.
What about it?
That's just ridiculous.
Who cares?
Sorry. We have.
I guess we should have turned off the television.
I told you it was distracting. I told you to turn it off.
I'm not distracted by it.
Oh, good for you.
I don't feel the need to comment about the chin strap beard of some dude on the television in the middle of a conversation. If I knew where the remote was, I'd get up and turn it off.
Well, look, I multitask.
But I ain't going to do that. You need to focus on your work here. on me. Focus on me. This is concentrate this is, on me.
This is all you ever say.
Yeah. What were we even talking about? Yakuza and how to pronounce it. Yes, I don't care.
Okay, fine.
I pronounce it the way I pronounce it. All right. If I go to Japan, some Japanese bro can tell me how to pronounce it properly. Until then,
I was just asking.
Okay, so it's these two rival Yakuza clans, and they're basically jockeying for position with the chairman.
They're both branches on the same tree, basically. Yeah,
but they fight against each other.
Yes.
And I think this pleases the chairman.
And, oh, no, please. Yeah. They're subtly encouraged to do so by the chairman. Like,
yeah.
He is the master of sort of passive-aggressive,
right.
Like, you know, let's make everybody fight for my favor, and I'm going to tell person A that, you know, person B needs to be eliminated, and then you can have blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, he'll go tell person B that person A needs to be eliminated, and he just sort of sits back and lets it all, like, unfold like crazy, and boy does it unfold.
It unfolds crazily with lots of violence in the best kind of way, like really creative killings, mm-hmm. really great sort of, you know, manipulations and people doing heinous, violent, murderous things to each other and then saying it is just a formality. I imagine it's like if you worked for Enron at the height of their power. Like, this would be what it would be like. It would be so full of just evil and duplicity and, you know, not perhaps literal killing, but, you know, the ruin of each other in some way or other.
Well, and what's great is, like, you know, you're used to seeing in a lot of these movies, you know, the whole, like, oh, I'm going to cut my finger off to as an apology or to show my fealty or whatever. And they're still like... Really, the finger?
Yeah.
That's so, like, you know, 1970s. Like, they're just like yawning at the finger thing. Like, what else you got? Boring, you know.
So that's, it's about two things. It's about the gangsters as, you know, a corporation, essentially. Right. And also,
or it's like courtiers, like it's like thing out of Macbeth.
Yeah, yeah. And also this idea of, well, Takeshi Kitano is one of the leads, and he's sort of like the number two guy to the boss, and he's always the number two guy. Like he's the dirty work guy. He's the guy that does all the killings and stuff.
He's always the bag man.
And he thinks that playing by these old fashioned rules is going to get him where he needs to go. But what he doesn't understand is that everything is changing around him.
Right.
And the new kids, they don't care about anything.
They have no sense of honor.
They have no sense of honor. Everyone talks about it through the whole movie. They talk about, oh, you're my sworn brother. And as they're saying it, you can see them laughing out of the other side of their face. And so, yeah, it's great. And full of death.
Yeah, I was very entertained. I will say... There are a lot of characters, and it gets very easy to lose track of who is betraying whom and what all is going on. Like one of my favorite movies still this year is 13 Assassins. And the thing is, you know who all 13 of those assassins are.
Well, yeah.
You know, you have, and certainly you at least visually know when they're on screen which one it is and who, what they're...
These guys all wear the same suit.
Yeah, why they're involved, what they're doing. Yeah, these guys, they all wear the same suits. They all, you know, and so many of them, you lose track of like, okay, wait, is this guy under Takeshi Kitano's character, or is this guy under somebody else?
You know.
And that may well be.
Corporate drone sort of, you know, idea going on. Well, yeah. So
gang colors would have helped.
Totally great. Totally great.
But yeah, no, it's a very entertaining movie. People should definitely check it out. And yeah,
and you can because of how it is on demand for you.
Yes. Again, in the United States, remember we are worldwide renowned gay critics.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We are worldwide renowned
in other countries.
I like that they put gay critics on the box. This is just because it was a gay movie.
Pretty much, yeah. I think they were just.
I'm talking about they put the on the Caged Men DVD that we just did a commentary track for.
Now available from Code Red DVD.
Now available from Code Red DVD. They said we were worldwide renowned gay critics. And that's true. I am a very harsh critic of all gay things. And so. So it was. I guess it was right. Like it was a good right of them to say that.
And I type all of my reviews with a very limp wrist. So
that's a fact. It's a wonder you can even hold up your own hands with them.
Look, I'm just trying to keep them above the keyboard.
Right. So
it's ergonomic. And so that leaves us with the, I guess, technically the widest release of the week. Or the most...
Wait, what else is there?
We're doing four movies, and we did three of them.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about we was banged right through those three. Shame,
which does not feature the song by Evelyn Champagne King.
That's what I should have played for the intro music. Much to its detriment.
You should have
played that for the intro music.
Why weren't you thinking, Dave Wyatt?
We have that on cassette.
Why didn't you concentrate and pay attention to the show?
I was thinking of Christmas. I had Christmas on my mind. My mind's on Christmas. Christmas is on my mind.
No worries. Yeah, so this is the second feature film from British artist Steve McQueen.
Keep talking, I'm a fan.
Who did the film Hunger about IRA activist Bobby Sands, which starred Michael Fassbender. This film reunites Mr. McQueen and Mr. Fassbender, and it's about a sex addict living in New York who, from the outside, is a very
Margie.
Okay, has a very kind
of pick up,
yeah. You know, from the outside, he has a very, you know, together existence. He's got a job. He's got a great apartment. He's a snappy dresser or whatnot. But
it is basically American Psycho without the cannibalism and murder
and the chainsaw.
Yeah.
He's not quite as obviously sociopathic as the.
No. I don't mean that he is. I mean the way the movie looks.
Yeah. Stylishly,
it's a very sort of flat.
Yeah,
looking environment.
It's coldly elegant.
Yeah.
And he has a sex addiction that grows ever more crippling as the film proceeds.
I think, honestly, that it's all context.
What is?
I think if he had walked around that whole movie with a smiling face, you wouldn't have thought he was a sex addict. You would have just thought he was really getting laid a whole bunch and happy about it.
But when a guy who looks like Michael Fassbender has to hire a prostitute,
extracurricular.
When he, you know, can like pretty much, you know, pick up any woman in any bar that he feels.
But what if he sees one online that he totally wants? If he sees some chick online that he totally wants, and then it turns out that she's a working lady, he's going to be like, "Well, you know, I could take you to dinner at a fancy restaurant and get some, or I could just pay you for your hour."
So it's an impulse purchase, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like buying batteries and gum and stuff at the Target on the way out.
I know what you're saying, that yes, that there's a fine line between like a playboy and a sex addict, but you know, with all the time that he spends on the internet and all the like magazines and VHS cassettes in his closet.
Okay, the fact that he does have an archive of print pornography suggests perhaps
this has been going on for a while.
That he's a little bit of an enthusiast, you know.
He's a porn hoarder.
Yeah, he's kind of a porn hoarder. But I think that the movie itself does not push your face into...
No. This is not an after-school special.
About the last third, you could honestly look at him as being sort of just a depressed, handsome guy that gets a lot of sex. Not necessarily an addict. Because, you know, I like the old joke of who's a sex addict. Anybody who gets more than you do.
Right.
And that's a thing that is there's a line that is subjective, and the movie doesn't present him as being out of control in other aspects of his life.
No, he keeps his
job. The apartment's nice and neat. Yeah. He's got friends. He hangs out, but he does other things.
There are undercurrents the whole time, like especially because the catalyst for the drama here is the arrival
the
of
sister.
His messed up sister, played by Carey Mulligan.
Right.
And that is pretty much presented as the get-go, as like this is the thing in this guy's life that he doesn't want to talk about, he doesn't want to deal with. So the seed is planted, if you will, that you know, all is not well with this gentleman.
I'm not saying that the movie doesn't convincingly portray a sex addiction.
No. But
I'm saying that up until a certain point of the film, you could interpret it a different way.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay, I'll give you that.
Because you look at him and you're like, well, you're Michael Fassbender. Of course you're getting some. You know,
and this
you could get anything you want.
And this is NC-17 Michael Fassbender, so we get a good long look at all.
Well,
of him.
Yeah, he shows you everything. And that's not the point. The point is that he's a handsome dude, and he can have whatever he wants. And so in the world of handsome dudes, you think, well, handsome dudes, they're going to get what they feel like getting. You know,
right.
The ladies are going to toss themselves
at it. Rock Hudson character in Pillow Talk.
Correct.
Or something, yeah.
So I think this is really, I like this movie more than you did.
You did.
And I believe that up to a certain point, it's actually sort of a subjectively,
it's a value
judgment on how much of an addict is he.
Yeah, and it's a smart movie about addiction in that it doesn't cram your face into oh, this is terrible, and here's how we're supposed to think about
it. Yeah,
this.
That's what I really loved about it.
It really leaves it to your own interpretation.
I'm a huge fan of Steve McQueen's detachment.
And I think that the parts of the movie that are about...
Did we discuss the nature of the director's name yet? Have we? No.
No, not really.
All right. His name is Steve McQueen. Say what you were going to say. Then we'll go back to
I think that the movie is most interesting when it is about Michael Fassbender and his sex life and his, sort of slowly unraveling.
You've been saying this a lot, and you're compartmentalizing a film that I don't think can be compartmentalized.
Well, explain
to me what you're trying to say.
I feel like that it kind of goes off onto tangents that are less interesting. I understand that the relationship with the Carey Mulligan character is supposed to underline certain aspects and indicate that clearly these guys come from a messed up background and yada da da da. And maybe it's just the fact that I found Carey Mulligan so annoying in this movie that kind of made that whole subplot feel not very interesting to me, because I just thought she was very actory and unconvincing, and it just felt like, oh, look at me, I'm the little prim British girl, but now I'm going to wear a smeared eyeshadow and be like, and wear a really ugly fur coat and have conniptions. And so I think when it focuses on Fassbender, it works. When she's brought into the picture, not so much. I think that there are a lot of things I like about this movie, but overall it was not, it didn't all work for me.
I think, I don't understand how you can separate the sequences that specifically depict his sex addiction.
I know what you're saying, that it's all part of one thing. But I think there are times in which McQueen goes off on these tangents.
I don't believe that's the case.
We disagree then, don't we? Where I just kind of like McQueen loves him some long takes, and he doesn't do it as much here as in Hunger, right? You were saying I didn't see Hunger, but
In Hunger, no, there are very, very, very long takes in Hunger.
So I mean, here you get 10-minute, 12-minute takes, and sometimes it's really effective. Like there's a scene where Fassbender takes a coworker out to dinner, and the camera is just locked down, and it's this whole sort of them kind of making awkward chit chat, and the waiter keep interrupting them at weird times and stuff. And like the sequence like that really works. And then there were other times where it's just like I found myself going, "Oh wow, this sure is a long take. Ooh, Steve McQueen, I'm so impressed."
But, that's not the point.
It's not the point, but that's how it plays. It whatever was happening on the screen was not compelling enough to merit the long take, and so the long take just became this showy thing that took me out of the story.
I don't believe it's showy. I believe that it's a distancing device.
And, when used effectively, yes. But it's not always
that
used
effectively
in this movie.
He is a very detached sort of director, and he doesn't ever, comment on the content.
I'm not saying he does.
And so the camera work, I believe, is part of his process, and I don't think it's a showy thing. Right. I don't think it's a look at me kind of thing.
Whether intentional or not, that's what it winds up being, because it doesn't work in the grander scheme of what he's trying to communicate, which it does. I think there are times when it's effective and times when it's not, and when it's not, it becomes a de facto distraction, basically. Mm. We disagree.
Well, then you would think all of Hunger is a distraction. Because Hunger is the kind of movie that looks like it should be shown on a museum wall.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's that. I mean, there's almost no dialogue in Hunger. There's so little dialogue in Hunger. Even less. I mean, there's not much dialogue in this movie.
Right.
And there's even less in Hunger.
All right, well. There's only you and me. And we just disagree.
But I'm right.
Yeah. Keep telling yourself that.
So anyway, his name, the director's name is Steve McQueen. He comes from the art world. He is not the Steve McQueen of Bullet.
Who is dead.
Who is dead, yes. Steve McQueen is British, and he is the 1999 winner of the Turner Prize, which is the big art prize in England.
Did you say there's also a Phil Collins who's a famous artist right now?
Yeah. Another well-known British contemporary artist is a guy named Phil Collins. He's a video artist, and he also has won the Turner Prize. He won in 2006.
Interesting.
And if you go to YouTube, you can actually type in Phil Collins into YouTube.
Is this like in local elections where like there's three people running for dog catcher and you don't know who any of them are, but one of them is named Jennifer Aniston, you just vote for her? Is that how this plays out?
No.
Okay.
Phil Collins has some cool videos. He does a lot of video work, and there's a really great series that he did of people singing Smith's karaoke. Okay. And it's you just go into YouTube and you'll find it.
Okay.
But he's not the drummer for Genesis. No. That's a different Phil Collins.
So we have Steve McQueen, we have Phil Collins, and we have Human Centipede 2 star Lawrence Harvey, who is not the guy from the Manchurian Candidate.
That is correct, yes.
You need new names, England. Get with it. All right, DVD pick. Or did you have more to say about her?
About Shame, you mean?
Shame, yeah, sorry.
No. What's my DVD pick? I don't know.
You said it was Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Oh, Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Why?
Well, I want everyone to see the pooping. I want everyone to see the parts where Jim Carrey holds the penguins up and squeezes white penguin poo out of their butts like condiments going onto a cheeseburger. He actually does this.
He holds them over a toilet.
Holds them over a toilet and gives them a squeeze, and out goes the, you know, into the toilet. It is the Human Centipede 2 of children's films. There is so much poop in this movie. It blew my mind how much animal fecal matter was going on in this film.
My DVD.
Somebody had to digitize that stuff.
Oh yeah.
Somebody spent hours and hours, days and days and days. What are you doing? Hey man, what kind of work? What are you working on right now, Mr. Popper's Penguins? What are you doing? The bird poop.
This is why I went to college.
Yeah.
My DVD pick this week is the Mystery Science Theater 22 box from Shout Factory. Featuring two of the Sandy Frank movies, Mighty Jack and Time of the Apes.
Nice.
Time of the Apes is great.
I hear he gads about the house all day.
He does. It's Spielberg return his calls. Also, The Violent Years, which I believe is an Ed Wood related thing, and The Brute Man starring Rondo Hatton. So,
nice.
And I think one of the extras is a documentary about Rondo Hatton. So
oh, cool.
Yeah. So a quick run through viewer mail, and then we have things to plug.
We gotta go.
This
is a fast one this week.
Okay. We gotta go. Marisa asks us, "What's the deal with Blade Runner? Why do people love that movie so much?"
Because it's rad.
You know,
awesome.
She was asking, like, you know, is it?
What, did she just see it for the first time?
Apparently so. Yes, and she was like, as science fiction, it's kind of doesn't really quite hold up. And I don't know that people really necessarily love it as a science fiction movie as much as I think they love the style of the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very cool kind of like, it's the sleek version of what's kind of the clunky, horrifying thing of Brazil, which is how do we mix like the 40s and the 80s and the future and the past and a sort of, you know, retro future stylistic thing.
Yeah.
I think that's what people appeal to, the very sort of noir-y, tamped down performances.
The part where Daryl Hannah...
Or Daryl Hannah
disintegrates on screen.
Oh, well, I was going to say when she does all the crazy flip kicks and
that too.
Somersaults. And
I just like the part where she...
Well, yeah. When Joanna Cassidy goes through all those windows, and Rutger Hauer's big speech. Everything about
Blade Runner is awesome.
Yeah. So, maybe from a sci-fi point of view, if that's your thing, you may be able to poke holes in it. But I think that in other aspects, it more than makes up for that. And that's why it is a beloved film. Just our theory.
And because nerds love all that stuff.
Yes.
On a plate. And you're not wrong for disliking it, like in the way that maybe Alonzo is wrong for liking or disliking things. You're not wrong because I don't know you very well at all, and so I'm
gonna. So she gets a pass.
You get a pass.
Fine.
Yeah.
Bite me, Dave White. James in the UK writes to remind us that Ken Russell passed away.
He did.
And that apparently the British Film Institute is about to be put out an uncut DVD of The Devils.
Oh, cool.
Which I've never seen.
Really?
Yeah, never seen it. And that was Derek Jarman's breakthrough movie. He was the art director on that.
We had a great time last year at the Cinematheque watching a double feature of Tommy and Listomania. Listomania was the first R-rated movie I ever snuck into.
I didn't go to that one.
I was a kid. I was a kid. Oh, wow. And I just sort of waltzed right into Listomania and like I bought the ticket to the kiddie matinee and then walked into the other.
Look at you.
Yeah, I was like, I had to see it because, you know, Tommy was so great. I had to go
see the other Roger Daltrey
rock and roll freak out movie from honestly, Listomania is kind of boring, but but I was so excited to be in it, you know. And there was like no one else in the theater.
I don't know if it's still online anywhere. Probably not, because most of my advocate stuff has sort of disappeared. But I interviewed Larry Kramer when the Women in Love DVD came out, and he talked about how like, you know, he was, because Kramer was the writer and the producer, so he could really run roughshod on Ken Russell.
Right.
And he talked about how he had to really sort of rein him in all the time. He goes, you want to see what Women in Love would have looked like if I had not been on his back the whole time? Watch The Music Lovers. But anyway, yeah, Russell, I think, is pretty terrific. I'm you know, Haunted Summer came out on DVD recently, and I thought, ooh, I want to see Gothic again.
Right.
That's a movie I haven't seen in like 25 years. Yeah. I was really a fan of it at the time. So
I was obsessed with Tommy as a child.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, mostly because I wasn't allowed to go see it in its first run.
Right.
My older brother had seen it. Huh. And he said it was just too much, like, perversion. You know? And I was like, and of course my dad was totally listening to my oldest brother.
That's how I didn't get to see The Spy Who Loved Me when it came out.
Because
my Fernando.
Which Fernando.
Yeah. Oh, you shouldn't do that. Yeah. So you know what my first 007 in a movie theater was?
What?
Moonraker. Which, as a kid, I wasn't old enough to know that it was stupid. You know, I thought it was awesome.
My first 007 in a theater was The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh.
Yeah. They were showing a matinee of it.
Christopher Lee and Hervé Villechaize.
Yeah, they had a matinee going on, and it was just PG. And I was like, I don't know how old I was, but I was old enough to go and get in and just walk right in. And so I went, and I was like, wow, this is, like, it was a very grown-up sort of experience.
Right. Oh, nice.
For me.
Okay, one last letter from Jennifer, who ordered a copy of my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. She sent me back a photo of the gift set that she is passing along to a friend that includes my book and a DVD of Holiday Inn and of The Holiday and some cocoa mix and some popcorn and a couple of festive holiday mugs.
Why are you telling everyone this?
Because people can still order a copy of my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Yes, they can.
Directly from me, and I will autograph it and sign it to anybody you want, if you want to give it as a gift, or sign it to you.
Lots of gifts for all your friends.
So you can drop us an email at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll give you the rundown on how to order it. And there is still time for you to get it by Christmas, so we will...
you get it this week.
Yeah, exactly. So we will get that rolling.
It'll be in your house this week if you order.
Drop us an email, and we'll make that happen. Also wanted to tell folks that I am going to be on TCM.
Turner Classic Movies this Tuesday night.
Yes.
It's called Now Playing.
No. It's called A Night at the Movies.
It's called A Night at the Movies, Merry Christmas.
And if you TiVo their Now Playing for December, it's a show they do, you can see a clip of me on the A Night at the Movies. But yeah, it premieres on December 6th. It's going to air a few times during the month of December. And it is part of a documentary series that they do. The last one was the one that aired in October with Stephen King talking about horror movies.
Yeah.
And they talked to Chevy Chase. They talked to Carolyn Grimes, who played Zuzu in It's a Wonderful Life, and various other actors. And then also me and Julie Solomon, who wrote The Devil's Candy.
Did you ever hear about what happened to Zuzu in her actual life?
I did, but I don't remember.
I just read this whole article about how, like, just tragedy upon tragedy just befell her, like, from teenage years on. Like, She made all these movies when she was a kid just because they happened to live near the studio. And she said, like, she and all the neighborhood kids would just walk on over and be like, put us in a movie. You know, like, and then they would just use them as extras and stuff. And eventually she wound up in It's a Wonderful Life and a couple other, like, High Noon or something. Like, about, it's like three significant films she wound up in. But then her mom died, and then her dad died, and they shipped her off to the middle of, like, Kansas or somewhere to live with these horrible relatives who like, forbid her from watching television or movies or anything. Like, just,
I hate stories like this.
No dancing, no singing. Like, this is, like,
grim.
Yeah, and she got married and had all these kids. She was raising seven children, and she was, like, a single mother, and, like, she had children she was raising from a husband's earlier marriage, but then the husband died, and then like her kid killed himself. Like, just everything that could go wrong for a person went wrong for her.
But she's still with us.
Well, now she's making a living off It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, yeah.
Finally good. I hope her kids are helping her out.
I hope
too,
so. Because I was approached last year by someone
she had a rough go.
Who's like an It's a Wonderful Life historian who I think who got a copy of the book. I don't know if it was like for a museum thing or to give to her. I forget. But he's friends with her and, you know, works with her and stuff. So, I hope things are better for Ms. Grimes.
Yeah. Because,
you know, we all. She deserves a wonderful life.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so check the TCM listings and go to TCM.com. And apparently TCM does air in foreign countries. So if you're one of our international listeners and you get Turner Classic Movies, keep an eye peeled.
What other countries is TCM in?
Well, my sister in Spain says they get it on their, like, satellite.
Oh, they're on the satellite. Okay.
So, well, a lot of people, you know, like, if you're on, like...
So if you live in Madrid and you have the satellite...
If you get... I bet if you have, like, Sky in London or whatever, you probably get it. They all get CNN, probably. So... Anyway, if you get TCM wherever you are, look for that. I'm very, very excited about that. And I leave this week for the TCM cruise, which is going to be great. So I won't be here on next week's show.
Not going to be a next week's
show. Yes, there is.
What are you talking about?
You and Gray are doing a show.
We are?
Yeah.
Does she know how to hook up everything?
She's the one who sold me this equipment. She knows
That's right.
And so I just
Coming over.
I just have to show her how to upload the show
on Sunday.
We talked about this. You don't listen to me.
I was sick. I've drunk a whole bottle of NyQuil in the past 4 days.
We talked about this a while ago.
I don't remember.
Anyway, so we thank you for listening again. If you want to order a copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, or just send us a comment or a question or anything else. You can contact us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, linoleumcast. You can like the Linoleum Knife podcast page on Facebook. You can check into Linoleum Knife on getglue.com, although we're listed under TV shows, and I don't know how to fix that. And we thank you so much for listening. And anything else?
Goodbye.